This is the kind of crack political thinking that turned Sharon Angle and Christine O'Donnell into GOP Senate nominees. The idea seems to be public will turn en masse against Barack Obama, and the Tea Party hobbits could return to Middle Earth having defeated Mordor.
I can't believe he actually said that. That's John McCain. Hi, Becky.
Yeah, hi, how you doing? Hey, everybody, it is the Rebecca Juro Show. That would be me over there. That would be him, Mr. Mike Scott, the erstwhile producer of this show. And yeah, that was John McCain. Scarily enough, one of the few Republican voices of reason in this whole debt ceiling fight. My God. You know, it's like, you know, you've heard the analogy of playing a game of chicken here, you know, and it seems to me that, like, you know, not only is the Tea Party in the driver's seat, but they seem perfectly content to, like, just drive the car right over the cliff.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and, you know, watch all the pretty explosions at the bottom of the canyon. Because they figure, at least it seems to me, I mean, I can't read their minds, but it seems to me that what they figure is that somehow, some way, this is all going to be blamed on Barack Obama. How that happens, I don't see it, because that's not what the polls are saying. It seems like, you know, people are getting it now. People are starting to understand that the people who are fucking around with our economy are not the Democrats, and it's not President Obama, it's the Republicans. They're just, they don't give a shit about what's right for the country. This is about, you know, let's see how can we screw Barack Obama. How can we screw the other side?
How sick is that? It really is.
It's like they're obsessed
about this one thing.
I mean, there's plenty of stuff. I mean, you know, it's not like other elections, previous elections that we've had in this country. It's not like there's been any shortage of attacks on the other side or good, honest political fighting and disagreement and debate. But why do they have to drive the economy over a cliff and do what amounts to or will amount to a huge tax on almost every American family? Now, of course, we know that the wealthiest people won't really feel it much because, you know, they've got lots of money. But average Joe and Jane America, the lower class, the middle class, folks like that, you know, if you got a mortgage, you're fucked. If you got a kid in college, you're paying student loans, you're screwed. Those are the people, once again, those are the people who are going to wind up paying for this nonsense. It's disgraceful. It's absolutely disgusting. You know, I mean, it's not like there's any shortage of politicians, Republicans, and right-wingers who are afraid to call out Barack Obama and afraid to call out the other side. And that's fair. That's politics. That's what the way our system works. And I am the last one to say they shouldn't be doing that. I mean, yeah, it would be nice if they didn't, but, you know, that's the way our system is. But to turn around and try and essentially drive the economy off of a cliff to score political points against the other side is, and to my way of thinking anyway, the most blatantly and incredibly irresponsible way of governing I think we've ever seen. I mean, certainly in my lifetime, you know, that I've ever seen. And I mean, you know, we've seen some pretty terrible stuff. But this, I mean, this just goes too far, I think. And my hope is what I think, what I suspect we're going to see in 2012 is that we're going to see a Democratic landslide. Because I think that the Republicans are counting on the fact that everybody's going to forget about this. that by the time 2012, by the time next November rolls around, okay, so what are we talking? A year and one, two, three, four, five months?
Yeah.
By the time that rolls around, 4 months, whatever it is, by the time that that rolls around, everybody will have forgotten about this. You know what? I don't think so. And if they do, you know, we can remind them of it with things like the Ryan plan. Remember that? I think a lot of people still remember the Ryan plan. I think the Democratic Party, if they have half a brain, and I think they do, maybe just half a brain, but they have at least that, they're just going to keep on bringing up what won them the day in the 23rd District of New York, which is, don't vote for Republicans because they want to take away your Social Security and your Medicare.
But I'm really upset because Obama, in a lot of people's minds, has signed on to killing Social Security and Medicare as well. I have neighbors who are quite upset at the president for having been conciliatory on that. And so in their minds, at least, in spite of the fact that he may not really mean it, I hope he doesn't mean it, he's lost a considerable amount of political capital by going there. I think it's the stupidest thing he's ever done, to tell you the truth.
I think, you know, the problem is I agree with you wholeheartedly that I think the president has caved far too much on this. I really do.
Absolutely.
So I absolutely agree with you. I think this is a guy who campaigns as a progressive but governs as a centrist.
Yeah.
I mean, there are those who have said, oh, he's really a Republican, which I don't buy. I really don't. But a centrist, you know, a moderate, yeah, absolutely. But that's not the guy we elected. We elected the strong progressive. That's how he campaigned. That's what people voted for. But that's not what we got. I mean, I think it's a real problem. And I think it's a problem that he's going to have to confront as time goes on and as we get closer to the election. Because I think there are going to be a lot of people who are like me and maybe like you, who say, you know, I believed you when you said you were going to support my civil rights. I believed you when you said you were evolving on same-sex marriage. I believed you when you said you were going to support the Employment Non-Discrimination Act. I believed you when you said you were going to stand up for us. Well, you know what? You asked, and you know, it wasn't just Barack Obama. I mean, we're talking about Democrats in general. Barney Frank said, get us, 15 more seats in Congress at the time in 2008, and we'll get INDA passed. He got 22 seats in the House. He had a majority in the Senate, and they still couldn't get it done. And I think there are going to be a lot of people like me, and maybe like you, who are going to turn around and say to them, well, you know, you got everything you asked for, and you still didn't get the job done. Why should we trust you this time? I mean, to me, I just think that he has to address that question with our community. I mean, I think that given the economic situation, I think it's unconscionable. You know, and the economic situation was just as bad, if not worse, in the 111th Congress, in the Congress before this one. So saying, well, you know, now we don't have the House, so, you know, forget it. It's like, that's bullshit. Because when you had the House, when you had the opportunity, you ran away like scared little children and hid under a rock. I mean, I think it's a disgrace. Okay, now they've got a built-in excuse. Well, nothing's going anywhere with the Boehner House. Yeah, that's true. But you didn't do a goddamn thing when you had the Pelosi House. I mean, the woman got over 300 bills passed in the House. You couldn't have taken the time to fight for the Employment Non-Discrimination Act? And then you're going to come to us and tell us that you're all about jobs? But you don't even take up this bill? It doesn't even get a vote? What kind of bullshit is this? I mean, you think the Republicans are full of crap? They've got no quarter on that market. That's for damn sure. I mean, I think it's a disgrace. And I think we have to call them out on it. And that's, and notice I did not say that we shouldn't vote for Democrats. But I certainly do say that if you believed in the Democratic Party and they didn't deliver for you, that you have a right to have some questions answered. And having Jay Carney, the president's press secretary, dodge the question every time it comes up on ENDA is not good enough. And just giving us boilerplate lip service at election time and making promises that you don't keep is not good enough. It's just not. You know, I don't know. I mean, vote for them? Sure. Did you want me to phone bank for you? Forget it. You haven't earned my support. You don't get my money, okay? Not that I have any to give right now, but you don't get my money. You don't deserve it because you didn't do anything to deserve it. You ran away, and now you're going and talking about the Defense of Marriage Act, which everybody knows perfectly well is going nowhere in this Congress. Even Barney Frank, back in March, spoke to Chris Geithner of Metro Weekly, a DC paper, and he told him that it's not going anywhere, that he doesn't expect the Defense of Marriage Act to even be repealed in Congress. He expects it to be resolved through the courts. But yet, what do we see last week? We see the Senate holding hearings on the repealing the Defense of Marriage Act. The bill that even the guy who is the go-to guy of the Democratic Party on LGBT rights says isn't going to be resolved in Congress. So what is this? All it is just bullshit pandering, okay? And supposedly the party who's going to take on jobs doesn't even have a hearing on ENDA. If they were serious about jobs, if they were serious about employment, that's what they would be talking about. So understand, I'm not saying they'll vote for Democrats. But I'm saying understand right now that when they start holding hearings on the Defense of Marriage Act and not holding hearings on ENDA, they're full of crap. And every time that they tell you they're about jobs, 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 they're liars, liars, liars. Understand that. They're not interested in helping you. They're interested in getting you to vote for them and to send them money. That's what it's about. Look at New York. I've said this 100 times on the show. What won the day for them? Money, money, money. Promises that Republicans who voted to legalize gay marriage would get taken care of by the ultra-wealthy gay community. That's what it was about. You know, I'll tell you, it's just, like I said, you have to understand where these people are coming from. If you're okay with that, well, then that's fine. But anyway, okay, so moving on.
Could I ask a question? We know Ethan is rebroadcasting this on Trans-FM. Hey, that's kind of cool. Ethan had a concern about the level earlier. Is that better, Ethan? I'm not able to get onto your chat room right now. So that's the question of the hour. How are we doing
okay,
for level?
Well, I have a window open with Ethan on Google Talk. So, thanks. Ethan, if you want to tweet, if you want to Google Talk me that answer, I will tell Mr. Mike.
Thank you.
But in any case, one of the things that was very interesting this week was the NAACP, the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People, had an ostensibly LGBT event, issues. You know, at least that's what they called it anyway. However, they came under some fire from our community because what it really was it wasn't LGBT, it was LG. They had no transgender speakers, no bi speakers, and, you know, somehow they tended to call that LGBT, because, you know, like so many other organizations. Ethan says, Mike sounds great. Becky is loud enough, but a bit muffled.
Yeah, sorry about that. I guess we'll have to fix it when we do the podcast. We're stuck with this kind of wacky sound that we're getting from our backup machine. Mm. So we praise Allah that we're able to be on the air today, even though it's slightly right. muffled. I'm sorry.
Right, and Ethan says it was an LGBT town hall at the NAACP conference. Of course,
right, yeah.
He is correct. And again, this came under fire. It was hosted by CNN's Don Lemon. Came under fire because really it wasn't LGBT. It was L and G. And most notably, one of our Balerico bloggers, a major activist in our community, Monica Roberts, wrote about this on her site. And it was also an appearance, an unscheduled appearance by, I'll call her an activist, Ashley Love, who some of you may know. Mm-hmm. Personally, I'm not the biggest fan, quite frankly. I think she's... I'm less than enthusiastic about her speaking on behalf of our community. Let's just put it that way. I won't out and out bash her. Just let me say I'm not a fan. But she did manage to get a few words in at this conference. Mike, why don't you run that clip?
And just before I go, just remember everyone in the LGBT community that it was transgender people of color that initiated Stonewall in 1969, which actually initiated the LGBT movement. And then to Don Lemon, I would just like to say I was at the Trevor Project Gala last month when you presented. And you got on stage, and I was so proud of you because you called out the LGBT establishment, and you said, we need to be more inclusive of people of color. And then I was, like, very confused, like, an hour ago when you were condoning the exclusion of transsexual and transgender people. I'm not saying it's hypocritical. I'm just saying it's extremely frustrating. Thank you very much.
Which was, I guess I'm glad she got a chance to speak, you know, but to be honest with you, I just wish it wasn't her. I would have much rather had somebody a lot more credible, like Monica Roberts, for example, or somebody, Marissa Richmond. You know, we have several, respected and high quality, I'll say, African-American trans activists who I would have much rather have been in that position. Frankly, I'm not, like I said, I'm not a big fan of Ashley Love. Her separatist tendencies bother me. I think it's great that she got to speak. I mean, in the sense that I think it's great that someone got to speak, but I'm not a big fan. Now, Ethan says, I don't always agree with Ashley Love, but I think what she did at the NAACP conference was very courageous, I'll agree with that, and done with the heart of a true activist. Her actions were no more crazy than the actions taken by Dan Choi and others when they chained themselves to the White House fence. Shame on Don Lemon for siding with the NAACP's choice of exclusion and trying to erase that fact by using Ashley as a scapegoat. Don Lemon called her crazy. Yeah, you know what? But you have to remember something, and I say this to Ethan, I say this to everybody. Don Lemon, I actually had a Twitter exchange with him on Twitter yesterday. And I can tell you that I think it wasn't that he thought she was crazy, although she certainly, frankly, doesn't seem a very, very good extemporaneous speaker. She was obviously doing that off the cuff, and she didn't come off very well. So for somebody who was seeing her and hearing her for the very first time, she came off a little wacky, and I could understand how somebody who has never, has no experience with the issue and no experience with Ashley Love could see that. Okay, I'm not saying I agree with it necessarily, although I'm not saying I disagree with it necessarily. But I am saying that I could see where that could happen. But I will tell you that my experience, now granted this exchange took place on Twitter, and when you're dealing with posts of 140 characters each, It's difficult to get a real sense of a person. Okay, and Ethan says she's young and she was nervous. Sure, absolutely. But my point was, Ethan, that she doesn't come off well. She doesn't come off well. And to somebody who's new to the issue and new to her, maybe she did sound a little nutty. I don't know. You know, but I could see where somebody could draw that inference. Again, like I said, I would have much rather have seen somebody like Monica Roberts or Marissa Richmond or somebody, frankly, a lot more credible and a lot more experienced and a lot more composed in public speaking have done that. You know, you get what you get and you had who you had, but that would have been my preference. But in any case, I had this exchange with Don Lemon, and he was really, I think, more than anything else, he was confused. He didn't know what was going on. He's like, why are people attacking me? I don't understand. And so what I said to him was, I Twittered him. I sent him the link to Monica Roberts's piece at Transgrio. If you go to Transgrio and you look at the link list on the side, you'll see where it says the NAACP thing, whatever, was history. So if you go there, you'll see that's the post that I sent to him the link to. And he looked at it and he realized what was going on. He saw the thing and his attitude was, oh, that poor girl. You know, I don't think he took her seriously because she didn't come across as a serious activist. She came across as somebody who just walked into the room with all the professionals, you know, and she was just trying to, you know, and like I say, I do not discredit her for effort or for intent, but I do have serious issues with her execution, if you know what I mean. I think there are several activists, and Ethan says, yeah, but she was the only one who showed up. Granted. But you know what? Again, you get what you get. But I would have liked to have seen somebody, frankly, more competent that's what I would have liked to have seen. And so anyway, I said to Don Lemon, I said, I'm not a big fan of Ashley, but that Monica Roberts, I consider highly credible. And of course I do. You know, Monica's writings at Transgrio are excellent. Her articles for the Bolerico Project. She's been a major activist in our community she's been around at least as long as I have, probably a lot longer than that. You know, so as far as I'm concerned, Monica Roberts is extremely credible. And as far as I'm concerned, when it comes to the issues of trans people who of color, she's my go-to person. When I'm looking for information, she's the first person who I would contact or look at her writings for information. Ethan says, he came across as a reporter who doesn't know shit about his own community. He's not competent as a reporter. That I disagree with. I think he, like a lot of mainstream news media reporters, he needs an education on trans rights. He doesn't understand. He came out as gay newly, and I don't think he really understands the trans community, and I don't think he has any information about it. I don't think he understands the history. And one of the things that I did was I used the example, which I tweeted to him, was I used the example of New York, where, of course, gays now have full civil rights in New York, but we, the trans folks, have none. And I think that kind of maybe brought it home for him just a little bit. I think, you know, and he asked me for more information. He asked me for Monica Roberts' contact information, which I did get him. And I'm hoping, I don't believe he has done so yet. And after all, the debt ceiling fight is right now raging. So could be, you know, CNN is obviously focused on other things at this exact moment. But I got the impression that he realized that he doesn't know enough and that he wants to know more. And that I got the sense from him, and I granted, like I said, Twitter, 140 character posts, there's just so much that you can gather from that medium. But I got the impression he's like, you know, maybe I need to learn more about this. And so, you know, like I said, when you want to know more about trans people of color, I send you to Monica Roberts, because that's the person who I consider the most credible. You know, if I, for some reason, couldn't get in touch with Monica Roberts, I probably would have directed him. I would have found a way to direct him to Marissa Richmond, because those two in particular are the two people who I consider the most credible. Ethan says he works for CNN. Do a Google search at least. Yeah, I agree with you. Okay, but, you know, again, he's newly out. He's probably still struggling with the whole gay thing. He, you know, and I really believe that he had what I called on Balearico an oh shit moment, which is he suddenly realized, you know, why people were taking his comments that, you know, he said something along the lines, and I don't have the exact quote, but he said something along the lines of, you know, gay and trans are the same thing. And I'm going to be wrapping this segment up in just a minute, because we're going to be getting Dana Byer on the phone. But, you know, I got the impression that he said the way he said it was taken as to mean that the gay and trans are exactly the same and there's no difference. And I think he didn't realize that kind of a statement would be taken. You know, he seemed to think, at least he said to me, that, you know, he just thought that we should all be on the same team working together. And I think he is in the process of coming to understand that, well, it doesn't always work like that. And I think I may have piqued his journalistic interest, at least I hope I did, you know, for him to find out more, to maybe do, and I mentioned to him, you know, gee, we could really use some coverage. So I'm hoping, you know, and I, like I said, tough to get a real sense of anybody over Twitter. But I think he may have realized that was, you know, he doesn't know as much as he should, and he needs to educate himself a little bit better. And so that's my hope, anyway. I mean, can I be sure? No, of course not. I don't really know the guy. I've never met the guy in person. We've traded 10 tweets with each other or whatever. But that's my hope. Okay? And so anyway, I wanted to talk about that just a little bit. And I really do hope that he'll get in touch with Monica Roberts and really explore this issue. And that, you know, maybe we'll get some good coverage out of that. We're certainly not getting it from MSNBC. So maybe CNN hopefully is a place where we can, you know, we know they did the feature on Susan Stanton, so maybe we can hope for some political coverage in that vein from CNN. It would be great, you know. I would love to see that happen. Anyway, I believe it is time for us to go to a song. We've got Sam Peterson from Transfusions. Mr. Mike has set up, and then we will be back and with Dana Byer.
Ooh, I love the guitar on this.
Yeah, see you in a couple. Thank you.
like Muhammad Ali. I've been stung by a bee. Hell, I'll take on the whole hive. It's what lets me know I'm alive. And it hit me. Go on, hit me, I'm punch-drunk.
Hey, Dana Byer is Becky Giro's guest coming up in just a minute or so.
This comes from a local reporter for the Washington Blade who says, recent reporting has revealed the clinic you co-own with your husband engages in a kind of therapy that is meant to help people get over their homosexuality. Do you believe the reparative therapy can change gay people into being straight? And has any federal funding gone for your clinic?
Well, I'm extremely proud of my husband. I have tremendous respect and admiration for him, and we'll celebrate our 33rd wedding anniversary this coming September. But I am running for the presidency of the United States. My husband is not running for the presidency. Neither are my children, neither is our business, neither is our foster children. I am running for the presidency of the United States, and I have no doubt that every jot and tittle of my life will be fully looked at and inspected prior to November 2012.
Oh, we love that Michelle Bachmann. She's just in there sidestepping all questions. So what's up? You got a guest on the line, I do believe.
Yes, we do. Hi, Dana. How you doing?
Hi, Beck. How are you?
Good. And, of course, this is Dana Byer, who, of course, is...
I thought I was Michelle Bachmann. Okay, sorry.
Oh, God.
No, there's no comparison.
Please, we've warped into the hell zone. yeah, she'll try and make us pray away the trans or something. but anyway, we should tell everybody, of course, that in addition to being a Maryland delegate candidate and a major activist in Maryland, you are also one of the leaders of a new organization called Gender Rights Maryland. And this organization, now please correct me if I'm wrong here, but this new organization was created in response to the way that the last time around with the Maryland State Legislature tried to get a trans rights bill passed and then failed. And there were a lot of people in Maryland in the activist community who were not happy with the way things were done. And this is kind of, in a way, a response to that. How am I doing?
Well, that's not quite right. And it's very easy to misunderstand because so many things happened during the past session, the time leading up to it, and the time following it. I would say that we formed Gender Rights Maryland for a number of reasons. One, because we had done as well as we did during the session, surprisingly well. Up until this past year, we had never gotten the bill out of the first committee in which it was heard. This year, we got two-thirds of the bill to the floor of the Senate after having passed it in the House and resurrected it from an attempt to kill it in the Rules Committee. And it was finally, with about a few hours to go, recommitted to committee by the Senate President for reasons that had really nothing to do with the bill. So it was incredibly significant progress for the community, and that was then followed by the attack on Chrissy Lee Polis at the McDonald's in Rosedale in Baltimore County, and that galvanized not only Maryland but also the United States. It was another awful hate crime, and this time, unlike most hate crimes against trans people, this was recorded, and it went viral. And the perpetrators have already been charged, and with hate crimes enhancements because we have a trans inclusive hate crimes law in Maryland, which we passed in 2005 under a Republican governor, no less. And so you put all this together, it just seemed like it was time again. And I use that phrase deliberately because the last time there was a trans rights organization in Maryland, it was called It's Time Maryland. And we view ourselves as their successor. The world has changed since then. Equality Maryland has fallen on some hard times. And because we did not want to lose the momentum from this past session and from the attack on Ms. Polis, we decided the best way to handle this moving forward would be to create a C3 and a C4 with an advisory board and do this as a united trans community.
Gotcha. Okay. Now, let me also ask you, because I'm curious about this. I mean, I thought the Chrissy Polis beating was really, it seemed like it was an instigation of a lot of interest. How much do you think, the attention that beating got and just the coincidental timing, which was literally a week right after the trans rights bill in Maryland went down in the legislature, did that play a major role in this, do you believe?
Yes, it did. And it got the governor's attention. And we're currently in discussions with the governor to have him sponsor our gender identity bill for the coming session, just as he's agreed to do for the marriage equality bill. But he noticed that. I mean, the entire political establishment noticed it, and he responded. And he said this needed to get done, and he wanted to be a part of it. So we are taking him up on that, and we're hopeful that he will be a major player in the coming session.
Excellent. Now another question that I had was, of course, we also know that there was a lot of acrimony around the way Equality Maryland handled the whole thing, that there was a lot of accusations that they didn't put in as much effort as they could have because they wanted to save all their juice for the marriage effort. And that there were a lot of people that said, "Well, we'll make a little bit of effort, but we don't really want to give our full force with this because what we really care about most is marriage. And take what we give you, we'll just drop you entirely and focus on marriage." Is that accurate? Are those accusations?
No. That's the last comment is not accurate. There have never been any threats like that, but, I think it's true, and as a national activist, I see a lot of this. I think it's true, and it's understandable that most of the LGBT community is gay and lesbian, and they're focused on gay and lesbian issues. And I say gay and lesbian, not bisexual, because even though the Williams Institute study showed that more than half of the LGBT community identifies as bisexual, we know that bisexuals are virtually invisible. I mean, the trans community is far more visible on national and local levels than the bi community anywhere in the United States. So that's a whole separate issue. But I had been on the board of Equality Maryland for 7 years, so I understood that most of the people whom Equality Maryland represented, most of our contributors, most of the community identifies as gay, male and female, and so most of the organization's attention is going to be placed on the issues of concern to that community. And we know nationally that trans rights are not up there. And it's really nobody's fault. I think it's just a matter of statistics. I think we as a community can do better to keep pushing it forward. We have some terrific allies within the LG community, but given the numbers, I think we do pretty well considering. So, I mean, there were no threats. There's nothing like that. The bulk of the time and effort of Equality Maryland and of the community as a whole was directed towards marriage. There's no question about that. But that was not surprising. The reason there was a conflict, besides certain communication malfunctions, which occurred because there were so many players involved in marriage, but they were all relatively behind the scenes unlike in New York, for instance, where there was that unified quartet of organizations working for marriage. The national organizations learned from Maryland's failure, and they switched around in New York in time to galvanize that state to pass the marriage equality bill. So there was miscommunication, but the main issue, and you probably remember this, was the fact that the Democratic House and a particular subcommittee and a particular committee in the House had stripped public accommodations from the bill. That was the source of most of the acrimony. That was not Equality Maryland's doing. Equality Maryland didn't message that well, didn't, you know, bring the community in to discuss it, but it was a done deal, and it had nothing to do with Equality Maryland pulling any strings. The organization never had that kind of power. This was a Democratic Party that was afraid of its own shadow when it comes to public accommodations and the, you know, the classic bathroom bill meme. And even though, and it should be noted, and we make this point, we win most of those referenda when they come to it. Mm-hmm. Not all of them, but we've won the majority of them. Still, it's very easy to freak out, you know, timid and uncertain legislators, even when they're Democrats. That was the cause of the split. But our success during the session and Chrissy's beating led us to hold a vigil on her behalf in which the entire community participated. We had at least 300 people, some people say 500, who showed up, people who had never been active politically in the trans community at all had come out. There were several people who had had surgery at Johns Hopkins back in the 70s who had never been politically involved who showed up for that vigil. So we started pulling the community together, and I believe we will be a unified community moving forward. Yes, there is dissent. There are always issues that are out there. But most of the folks who were on opposite sides of this last year always had the same strategic goal in mind. The issue was not one of strategy. It was not one of the final goal. It was a matter of tactics. So that's no longer a problem. We're moving forward together as a unified community with the goal of comprehensive legislation. The governor supports that. We believe most of the legislature will support it. I think Chrissy's beating was probably the catalyst for that, to wake people up, to have them realize that trans people in bathrooms are the ones at risk, not non-trans people. So I believe we're going to get that done, and I think most of that, the chasm that divided these two segments of the community, has been basically healed over by now.
Okay, let me ask you another question, though. One of the things I know that happened in the New York fight was that many of the newspapers and the local media were reporting that part of what turned the tables, part of what got them to actually pass the marriage rights, was the intense amount of money and media interest that was poured into that fight by, frankly, wealthy gays and lesbians who said, you know, that were focusing completely on marriage, and, you know, you saw commercials on television in this area all the time, and that there was an incredible amount of cold hard cash that was devoted to that specific issue, whereas GENDA, the Gender Expression Non-Discrimination Act, which of course is the bill in New York, the equivalent bill in New York, didn't get any of that, really. And, of course, very quietly was killed by the Republican Senate leader with virtually no coverage. The only coverage that I saw at all in New York was Gay City News, who covered it after the fact, once it was already dead. There was nothing in the media. Whereas there was constant coverage of the gay marriage fight. Do you believe that the money plays a factor here? And do you think it's going to play a factor in the Maryland fight going forward?
No, I don't think it's going to play a factor in Maryland. As you know the old saw from Tip O'Neill, all politics is local. And in New York, first of all, there are two... There's one major difference between New York and Maryland, and that is Maryland is a referendum state. New York is not. In New York, they had polling. They showed 58% in support of marriage. So that created a very strong base from which to move forward, and the Democrats moved forward strongly. The problem was the Republicans controlled the Senate. So the activists knew from day one that they needed to swing a few Republican votes. That's where all the Republican money went. That's where Bloomberg's money, that's where Ken Mellman's money, that's where the hedge fund money, that's where it all went, to swing those people. And those people were convinced because, A, there's no referendum in New York, so they weren't going to have to deal with the consequences of passing the bill, and, B, they knew that that money was there to protect them in their upcoming elections, that those folks, probably more Republican money than Democratic money, but there's been a pledge of support from the Democratic side to support those Republicans who voted for marriage equality. Yeah, in the New York media market, they really got into it. That was played very well. We've had pretty good exposure here on gender identity issues in our media market. We have the Washington Blade, which is, I will say, the nation's premier LGBT newspaper, and they've been covering this. Metro Weekly covered it. They blogged our issues repeatedly. So we got a lot of attention. Going forward, we are going to be competing again, but we're not competing from within the same community structure anymore. There is a marriage coalition. There will be a gender identity coalition. We will be going on parallel paths, and I believe we will both get media attention. Both of us, though, as I mentioned again, are subject to the referendum, which is going to be the critical issue in Maryland, rather than getting this through the legislature. And that's something that cannot be forgotten. We are advantaged with that. We have routinely pulled 65% support statewide for comprehensive gender identity anti-discrimination policies. Marriage, to the contrary, has had only one poll greater than a 50% majority, 51% last year. That's a huge difference. So I believe we are very well situated to make the case to the legislature and to the governor that you pass our bill and we will be able to defend it far better than marriage can be defended in the state. But I'm not detracting from marriage. We support marriage equality. Marriage equality has an impact on gay trans folks, and it also has an impact on straight trans folks, as we've discovered in Texas. This is all one complicated mix because most Americans who oppose us oppose any sexual minority, so we're all conflated together anyway. So it's a very local issue. One other factor that distinguishes Maryland from other states is that we have a four-year cycle here. Elections are every 4 years, which, if you're not in the legislature, is very problematic. I can say that personally. It's a long wait. But because it's a four-year cycle, the Senate president, who is the most powerful person in the government here in Maryland and has been in power longer than any Senate president in American history, 26 years, going on 26 years now, will not allow any social justice bill to come up in the last 2 years of a term because it will be petitioned to referendum during the election year when the assembly is up for re-election, when their governor, lieutenant governor, attorney general, controller, when the whole, everybody in Maryland, virtually everybody except for a few school board positions and a couple of local mayoral races and such, are up for election or for re-election. So the system basically gets shut down. You can only move controversial, quote-unquote, controversial progressive legislation during the first 2 years, which was last year and this coming year, because the referendum would be in the presidential election year, not in the state and local election year, which is why we have to do it now. We will not do this in 2013 or 14. It would have to wait till 2015 to happen.
Gotcha. Now, let me ask you a question. As is so often the case with transgender rights bills these days, one of the big issues last time around was the bathroom thing. Has Gender Rights Maryland come up with a strategy for challenging this whole bathroom nonsense this time around?
Well, we use the strategy everybody else has been using, which is basically to say this is a civil rights law. And when people understand that, you've probably had people tell you before, I think the latest national survey showed that 89% of Americans thought that gay and trans people were already protected under the law.
Yes.
When you tell people that, when you remind them that these are protections everybody should have, but that we don't have, they're appalled. And then two-thirds of the population, as I mentioned, it was 65% in the last poll, are supportive. Then if the right wing comes in and says, oh, my God, there'll be those predators in the bathroom, the support drops. But if you come back and you talk about civil rights and you show a smiling face to the public, they almost invariably come back. We don't win every single one of those, but we win most of them. So while we don't have a 30-second soundbite that we've been able to share nationwide that would put this to bed once and for all, and I'm hoping that there are people working on this, because we have some very bright and talented folks in our community, both the gay and the trans community, who might be able to come up with something that would make this much easier. You know, the right wing has with the picture, the grainy, you know, grayish picture of the predator in the bathroom threatening the little girl. This works for them, but I think it's also getting old. I think people in Maryland have already seen this. I think they know better, and we have to counter that, the Chrissy Polis video. And
right.
That has really shaken people up, and it's shaken up legislators. I don't believe, I might be proven wrong, but I don't believe from my discussions to date that that's going to be an issue with the legislature. And I think if we get it through and we handle our media exposure well going into any potential referendum, that that won't get traction. I'm hopeful that it won't. I think the world has really changed here. And that's why I'm optimistic. I'm always optimistic because I don't like living as a pessimist anymore. I did before transition. I don't anymore. But I am particularly optimistic because of the confluence of events that I've described to believe that we can get this done.
Okay. You know, because I'll tell you, it seems like this bathroom nonsense has always been, it's what people, the few people who actually talked about the bill in New York were hawking about. Massachusetts, of course, we know that this has been a very popular argument there. All these other states that have considered trans rights laws. And it seems to me, in fact, I was having a conversation with Ethan St. Pierre on the show just last week, and one of the points that he made that I thought was a really good one, and I always wonder why our community doesn't make this point more often, is that, you know, you're worried about trans women in the bathrooms, but yet somehow trans men in the ladies' room, this is not a problem?
No,
why
not.
Is that?
Well, that's because most homophobia and transphobia is simply misogyny. That's been transmuted into specific fear of sexual minorities. Trans men don't exist in the minds of religious fundamentalists or radical feminists either, for that matter, which is kind of funny. But you might have seen some of those debates out there on Facebook and in the blogosphere. But trans men really don't exist in these people's minds. And whenever I've had discussions with them, and I don't shy away from that, I actually consider some of these people, you know, political colleagues in a way. I'd like to engage with them. They really, their eyes glaze over. They cannot fit trans men into their mindset. Think back. It wasn't that long ago. Remember when Tom Beatty was pregnant?
Yeah. Well,
remember
you
that?
Know,
and I can tell you that in the national movement, we were a bit anxious about how that was going to play. Because think about it. You've got a trans person who looks like a guy, who's acting like a guy, and is about to give birth to a baby. You've got, that is such a combustible mix when it comes to religious people and, you know, children and God and, you know, God's way and this and that, that you would think that that would be an explosive mix, right? Didn't turn out to be that way, did it? Hardly anything was made of it. I mean, Tom even came back up pregnant again and was back on Oprah again the second time. Nobody made an issue. It barely made a ripple in the cultural, you know, landscape. And that's because Tom was a guy. Look at Chaz Bono.
That's what I was just going to bring up. I mean, I thought that here's a guy who is going to, you know, really send some shockwaves into the public psyche. And I don't know. I mean, maybe it's just me, but I haven't seen it. I mean, he appears on all these late-night talk shows. Nothing.
Nothing, no. Chaz has actually been well-embraced by Letterman, basically. You know, you would listen to these folks talk about how they were sort of surprised and confused by this, because they'd always show Chastity with Mom and Dad, that iconic photo from 1969. I don't know whether I remember actually seeing it in 69 or whether I've just seen the photo so many times that I seem to remember seeing it, but I used to watch the Sonny and Cher show. So
did I when I was a kid. I was like seven, eight years old.
So this is what you look at. So you think that, my God, people would be totally blown away by this. No. Chaz is a pretty much typical guy. He's a sexist guy, you know, and men relate to that. And women seem to relate to it, too. So they go, oh, yeah, he's a guy. What's the question?
Yeah,
no, but, it's all the misogyny. You know, it's trans women, and it's, you know, it's butch lesbians and stuff who men can't, right, you know, get a handle on. It's always about women, and that's why it's always about women in the bathrooms, because those fundamentalists think about male sexual predators all the time. They're taught to fear men, right?
But don't you think it's also that in our culture, in our society, it's somehow acceptable for a woman to want to be masculine? It's acceptable, tomboyism, for lack of a better term, acceptable.
Right.
But feminism in a quote man or male is unacceptable. It's not. Right. It's okay for a woman to want to be like a man, but it's not okay for a man to want to be like a woman. So
it's not a stretch to say that men have a much harder time in our society today than women do. When I transitioned, and I just a couple of days after, I met a cousin who didn't even know I was doing this. I kept it secret from her. I rarely did it, but I did it with her. You know, and we went out to lunch in San Francisco, and she said, "You're going to love this. You're alive now. It's the best time in world history and the best place in world history to be a woman." And it's true. You know, I mean, women have really, in many places on this globe, really have a hard time. But in America, in the 21st century, life is pretty good for many people, for many women, compared to the way it is elsewhere and the way it's been throughout history. Men, on the other hand, are really constrained. They have to, you know, fit into this very narrow, you know, into the suit and the tie, and it's the uniform, and it's a uniform behavior, and it's uniform expectations, and everybody's supposed to fit in that, and men can't do that any more easily than women can. So I sort of feel for the guys. And trans men talk about that too, but it's very easy for trans men to transition into the society because it's, you know, all you have to do is sort of grow a beard and lose a little hair on the top of your head, and you're like one of the guys. You don't have to do much else. But we hold women to very, very high standards of beauty and behavior and such, and that makes it difficult. But in those parts of the country where you don't have to do that, where you can be more masculine, where you can be a tomboy, where you can be 6 foot tall or 5 foot tall or whatever, life's much better for women. But fundamentalists can't deal with that. We don't fit into their mindset whatsoever. I had a very interesting discussion with the leader of my opposition here in Montgomery County, who said, you know, Dana, I don't have anything against you personally. I actually like talking to you. What I do dislike is just even thinking about people like you. It just messes with me. I don't like thinking about the whole concept. So we don't fit into that worldview, which is unfortunate because, you know, what Christians have done is they've basically, again, narrow-casted the Jewish tradition, which has room and has space for different types of people, for intersex people, for men and women who don't fulfill naturally limited binary roles, and they are living in a world, these Christian fundamentalists and some Muslim and some Jewish fundamentalists too, to be fair, with a very narrow perspective, and they simply don't want to think about it. It's just too anxiety-provoking.
Yeah. I totally agree with you there. Hey, Dana, thank you so much for joining us again. It's always great to have you on. I hope you'll come on again soon.
My pleasure.
Awesome.
I hope we have some good news for you, and you know, by this time next year.
Well, you know, well, hopefully we'll be having you on again long before that. But nevertheless, whenever you have news that you want to share with the community, I hope you'll come on the show and tell us about it, because, you know, that's all that's what we're about. Anyway, we're going to go to a break, so I'm going to say goodnight.
Thank you.
I'll talk to you soon. Okay, bye-bye. All right, and that was Dana Byer, new head of Gender Rights Maryland, a major activist, former candidate for Maryland State Delegate, and all kinds of interesting good stuff, and not incidentally, also a doctor. So anyway, we are going to go to a song. I believe we've got our honey Jane County all wrapped up and ready to go there, Mr. Mike.
Here's Jane.
All right, we'll be back in a couple, gang.
Last night a shadow fell upon my lonely room. I touched your golden hair, tasted your perfume. Your eyes were filled with love the way they used to be. Your gentle hand reached out to comfort me. Came the dawn, you were gone, you were gone, gone, gone. I had too much to dream last night, too much to dream. I had too much to drink last night. Oh, 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 last night. My room was empty as I staggered from my bed. I could not erase the empty place into my head. You were so real, I could feel your eagerness. Then when you raise your lips for me to kiss, in the dark, then you were gone, you were gone, gone, gone. I had too much to dream last night, too much to dream. Too much to dream last night. No, last night. No, I had too much to dream last night. I had too much to dream. I am not ready to face the light. I had too much to dream last night. Oh, 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 last night. Oh, oh, yeah. Too much to dream last night. 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 Dream, 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 dream last night. Dream last night. Dream last night.
One of our great friends of the Becky Giro Show is Jane County. There she is with Too Much to Dream Last Night. That's the old Electric Prunes song recorded live.
Is
and
that all there is?
We believe in surrealism on this program.
Is that all there is?
Becky will be back in just a moment.
If that's all there is, my got the booze and have a ball. If that's all there is.
So speaking of surrealism, Becky, Boner has decided that he's not going to have a vote on anything having to do with the budget today.
Well, because, you know, the you know what it is.
Yeah.
You know what it is.
I don't know. It's
he can't control his own caucus. That's the problem.
Oh.
He can't control his own caucus. This guy, I mean, this is what you get. You know, and I hate to put it like this because, you know, the truth is one of the things that I've been advocating is that we start primarying people who are, you know, who are failing us.
Like Obama,
you know,
and I'm saying I'm actually saying that for the first time ever on this show. But I've been saying that on blogs and stuff for a while now. I think that's true. I think he does need to be primaried. I'm a bad person for saying
you know,
that.
I don't know. I mean, as much as
you're not going to go there,
I would
this
like
time.
To agree with you. I unfortunately don't think. I don't think I do, okay? I would like Obama to win because he's our best chance of keeping the White House. And the White House matters. It does. And, you know, Obama is far from perfect. I have a lot of problems. But the truth is, we got nothing to replace him with.
So who do you want a primary? You do want a primary somebody.
Oh, you bet.
Now who?
For one thing, I would like to see Nancy Pelosi.
Oh, come on now, Nancy.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, here's a woman who is from a district in the city with the largest LGBT population, percentage of population in the entire country. A woman who, when she was Speaker of the House, was all jobs, jobs, jobs. And what did we get? We got hate crimes, which is good. Okay, but let's be honest, that was low-hanging fruit, okay? That, you know, it's hard for the Republicans to make an argument. We think it's a good idea for gay and trans people to get beaten up and bashed and for, you know, nothing to happen to these people.
Okay.
It's tough to make that argument, you know? Okay, then what else did we get? We got the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, which I should point out is still limping along, but it's going to happen. The reality was the one issue that we really needed most from them in this economy, with jobs being at a premium, the one issue we really needed was workplace rights, and that was the one they ran away from, okay? And not only did they run away, but Obama ran away. So nor have I ever said, oh, you know, we should primary Obama, you shouldn't vote for Obama. I have never said that. And I'm not going to say it now, but I am going to say, you know, this is a great point for me to throw in a story. I got a call. In fact, I got two calls earlier this week. And they were both from Democratic Party. One was from the party as a whole, I think, and the other one was from the Democratic Senatorial Campaign Committee, the DSCC. And they're both like, well, you know, the Republicans are doing this, and they're doing that, and they're doing the other thing, and we've got to stop them, and so give us money, and, you know. And I said, you know, I'm a transsexual woman, I'm a transgender person. What is the what have the Democrats done for me? Why is it that, you know, you're coming to me for money, but when we need you guys to stand up for us, you know, you're somewhere else. And you know what one of these people said to me? It was the most unbelievable thing I've ever heard.
What?
Oh, well, we make it a policy not to discuss politics. It's like, excuse me, but you just spent the last 10 minutes giving me this political speech on the phone.
Of course.
As to why you need my money, and now you don't want to talk politics? What the hell? And then you wonder why nobody takes you seriously? Give me a break. It's the stupidest thing in the world. They call you up and they say, give us money for this, that, and the other thing. But when you say, here's the issue that I care about, then it's like, oh, well, we don't want to talk politics. Well, you want to talk politics when it's your issue, when it's give me money. But when it's turned it around and say, well, what have you done for me lately? When are you going to keep the promises that you made to me back and to the rest of us in 2008? Then you don't want to talk politics. What were you just about to throw something on there, Mr. Mike?
Oh, dear. I don't know what I'm doing with myself. It's a baby crying. It's
oh, my goodness.
I don't but, you know how it happened.
All right. Oh. Oh, taking a sip off my coffee there.
There's a baby under the table.
Mike, have you been doing something that we're not aware of here? Any surprises?
FBI, don't move! Drop the gun now!
That's all.
Another person?
Hello, are you there? Oh! Well, something bad's going on, that's for sure. Well, welcome back to your show. I have no idea what's going on. What happened?
Oh, my goodness.
It is a show of sorts. It's the Rebecca Giro show. Are you there?
I am here.
Hello!
Am I here? Hello?
I don't know what's going on. First, we had the baby under the table. We're trying to drown that baby in the bathtub. Grover Norquist.
Uh-oh. Can you hear me? What? Can you hear me?
Yeah, can you hear me? Uh-oh.
Yeah, okay. Well, all right, then, as long as you can hear me, getting back to what I was saying.
Yes, can you hear me, though?
I can hear you just fine.
Oh, thank God.
Oh my goodness. Always an adventure on the Rebecca Giro show.
But it works better than some shows.
Yes, it does.
At least we're on.
Getting back to my point. Another person who I'd like to see primaried, George Miller, who was formerly back during the 111th Congress, was the chairman of the Labor and Education Committee in the House. Here's a guy who promised us, I think it was at least that I remember, at least seven times, promised us a vote on ENDA in the House. Never happened. And this guy, I mean, he just, you know, he got to the point where you start to say, you know, is this guy really, you know, I mean, does he just like make it up as he goes along? Or did he really believe that he was going to get a vote? Because every time that he was asked, he said, yeah, well, it's coming, it's coming. You know, he got protested by Get Equal. He promised to vote. You know, we heard it over and over and over. Like I say, at least seven times that I can remember. Probably more. I'm probably forgetting a few. Okay? But, you know, it just seems like this guy was just saying it, just to say it. And when push came to shove, we got nothing. Nothing. Okay, and so any party leadership that says to you, we care about jobs, and then turns around and the biggest jobs bill of our entire community just ignores, throws the 99.99% of the community under the bus, and then comes back to you and says, we're all about jobs, and runs away from the most important jobs bill that our community has. I mean, I'm sorry, but to me, that's just not credible. You know, and then, and now, what are we seeing? What are we seeing? Now, all of a sudden, it's the Defense of Marriage Act. Let's repeal the Defense of Marriage Act. Hey, who cares if Barney Frank says that it's going to be repealed in the courts and it's never going to see the light of day in Congress, right? Who cares about that? Let's hold hearings on that. Let's spend our time with that, okay? Even though we promised a vote on the Employment Non-Discrimination Act that never materialized, even though, you know, we could actually have a hearing, even though the last time that we had a hearing on the Employment Non-Discrimination Act and transgender inclusion, we couldn't even manage to have even a single transgender witness at that hearing, even though we're so backwards that we're still so cowardly and spineless on LGBT issues that we can't even hold a hearing, much less a vote. But you should trust us that we're on your side and that we support your jobs and your right to work, right? That's who I think we have to, I think we have to go and say, you know what? If you don't support us, then we're going to do everything in our power to replace you with somebody who will. And I think that we have to take a page from the Tea Party. And I hate saying that, but it's the truth. Look at how the Tea Party right now is having such an impact on the discussions over the debt ceiling. Look at how they are driving the agenda in the Republican Party. Now imagine if we had a progressive caucus, imagine if we had a progressive party that had the same level of power in the Democratic Party. Imagine that. Imagine how much better the chances for our issues to make it to the front of the onto the table and to the front of the line would be. You know, I mean, to be honest with you, you know, half of me says, well, you know, you really don't want to fuck with the Democrats because after all, the alternative would be so much worse. But, you know, at this point, I don't see how it can get much worse. The only way it could get any worse is if we have a Republican Senate and a Republican White House. Okay, I mean, they're doing enough damage just with a majority in the House and just with, what is it, 89 Tea Party or like 70-something Tea Party members. You know, look at how they are dragging the agenda to the right in the House of Representatives. How about if we had a corresponding far left dragging the agenda back to towards the left to balance that out? At least get to the point where reasonable heads can prevail. I mean, that's the reason I say it, because it doesn't seem like anything else is working. You know, appealing to these people, appealing to their, say, keep your promises. Well, that stuff doesn't work. It's not working. Because, you know, you get Nancy Pelosi who says we're going to do this. And then when it comes time to do it, she goes and does Don't Ask, Don't Tell and says, oh, well, that's what the community told us they wanted. To which I say, bullshit. That's what your rich friends at the Human Rights Campaign told you they wanted. That's what the people who are funding your campaigns on the left say they wanted. That's what the millionaires said they wanted. It's certainly not what the rank and file, lower and middle class LGBT workers, gays in 29 states, and transgender people in 35 states told you they wanted. So you're a liar. And not only are you a liar, but you're a coward. And we need to get liars and cowards out. If it's wrong when Republicans do it, it's just as wrong when Democrats do it. And we have to be able to say, you know what? If you're not going to stand up for us, then we're not going to stand up for you. We have to be able to do that. Okay? We need a Dan Choi. Okay? And you know what? You know, in some ways, on some things, on some issues, I'm a big fan of Dan Choi. I think he's got the right idea. On the other hand, on other things, not so much. Look at how he's rah-rahing for the repeal of the Defense of Marriage Act. Again, even though this is a fantasy that's never going to happen, okay? And you know, the one question Dan Choi and his friends always avoid is, you know, you're so big on the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell. You know, we should have the right to serve. It's like, but, you know, why is it that you're so concerned about the rights of people who are in the military to be able to serve, but not their those same people's right to work when they come home, when they retire from the military, or when they have been thrown out, and they return home to the United States of America, the country that they've risked their lives to defend, and they don't have the same rights as everyone else that they fought for? How come that issue isn't tops on your agenda? How come the soldiers who are in the military are so much worth fighting for But the soldiers who are retired from the military and are now looking to make lives after their military service are not. Explain that one to me. Why is it more important to focus on the Defense of Marriage Act? Because let's be honest, sure, plenty of people want to get married. But it's a hell of a lot less than the people who need to be able to get a paying job, who need to be able to go to work every day, who need to be able to put food on the table, a roof over their heads, take care of their children, take care of their spouses. Okay? As many people as want to get married, it doesn't even compare to the amount of people who need paying work, who need to survival first. Survival first. And that's the fundamental problem with these folks, with these rich folks. Because why? Because the Defense of Marriage Act, gay marriage, it's all funded by the super wealthy. Well, the super wealthy don't have to worry about jobs. They've got all the money they need. They have nice homes. They have good jobs. They don't give a fuck about the lower and middle classes. This is less about issues. And it's, you know what this really is? It's class war. It's class warfare. It's the, once again, everybody accuses, oh, you know, the Republicans, they're all just supporting the wealthy and they don't care about the lower and middle classes. Well, you know what? It ain't just the Republicans, folks. It's the people on the left as well. The people on the left, the Democratic Party, the leftists, okay, the quote progressives. You see it on MSNBC, or I should say more specifically, you don't see it on MSNBC. I mean, that's what you see. This stuff is funded by the people who claim to be on the left, but in reality, the people who they're really on the left, the progress, is progress for the people who can afford it. How much justice can you afford? That's what it's about. How much cold hard cash can you afford to pay the Democratic Party and the politicians on ostensibly on the left to purchase your civil rights? How much are you willing to give to Governor Paygo Cuomo for him to champion your cause like the rich gays and lesbians did in New York? How much are you willing to pay off the DNC so that you can get a fucking hearing in the Senate? Why do you think they had a hearing on the Defense of Marriage Act, but no hearing on ENDA? Why? Because what is the issue that the rich care about? Marriage. That's what the people with the money have. And, you know, hey, there's an election coming up. So what do we care about? Do we care about doing what's right? Do we care about showing that we care about the left, your working families and all that, like you hear all the time? No, they care about raising cash. And the people with the cash are the people who want the Defense of Marriage Act passed, repealed, excuse me. And so that's what you see. You see here a hearing held on the Defense of Marriage Act, again, a bill that even the lead guy in the Democratic Party on LGBT rights, Barney Frank, says is going nowhere and at minimum isn't going to be addressed until the Employment Non-Discrimination Act is dealt with, at minimum. And you see this issue that they say they support, that they're all jobs, 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 that they say that they're on your side, but when it comes time to actually do something about it, you got nothing. They can't even hold a fucking hearing. So again, realize who you're dealing with. Whether you're talking about Democrats or Republicans, they understand one language, and that language is green and has pictures of dead presidents on it. That's what it's about. And it doesn't matter whether it's in Congress or in state legislatures, okay? I mean, you know, why do you think that these whack job Christian right-wing organizations have such traction in places like Massachusetts and Maryland and other places? Why? Because they spend lots of money politically on politics. They throw the money around. and they have more money than a community like the transgender community is ever going to be able to come up with. You know, and I'll tell you. I saw something this week, just to shift gears a little bit here. I saw something this week that really impressed me. And surprisingly enough, or maybe not surprisingly, but interestingly enough, shall we say, it came from the Human Rights Campaign. And what is that, Mr. Mike? Are you trying to slip your way in there?
No, I'm just here enjoying the show.
Well, why don't you throw on another song there, Mr. Mike? And when we come back, I will tell you
of course.
Exactly what impressed me about the Human Rights Campaign this week.
All right. Well, let's have a little excerpt of a thing called Mama's Not Dead. We played this on the show several years ago when we were doing the Becky Giro show, and I just discovered this amazing techno thing done by Vaginal Davis and Technova and Vaginal Davis. And so here we go. It's called Mama's Not Dead, and we'll just think about why it's only in one channel. Why is it only in one channel? Why is that? Oh, Becky.
Oh, yes.
I don't think it's going to be working properly. I don't think we have Vaginal on here. Let me find out. This is coming from an iPad. So the iPad's been acting up. We certainly appreciate our audience for being so kind to us when we have... I can hold it up to the microphone. Here it is.
We've got the best audience.
No, we're not going to do that. I'll plug the iPad back in.
Oh, well. Okay.
Oh, and there's Vaginal now.
Ah.
Goodbye.
See you. Okay. We are back. How you doing? You know, want to tell you, I promised you something about something that the Human Rights Campaign announced this week that impressed me. And, you know, as I've said on the show a number of times, I think we have to keep an open mind. They haven't done anything this year that's really pissed me off, or I would imagine probably pissed most of you off. And so, you know, I want to give, you know, be fair, you know, and they announced something called On the Road with the Human Rights Campaign. On the Road to Equality, I should say. It's a bus tour. They're going to visit areas of the country where the LGBT community continues to, you know, have problems getting rights. Now, of course, needless to say, they're not covering every place where we need rights. It seems like from their itinerary, they're really going to areas where it's the toughest. Let's see, Salt Lake City, Utah, Omaha and Lincoln, Nebraska, Lawrence, Kansas, Kansas City, New Orleans, Austin and College Station, Texas, Little Rock, Arkansas, Louisville, Lexington, Kentucky, Washington, D.C., not quite sure what the deal is with that one since they already have gay marriage and trans rights, but all right. Atlanta, Georgia, Birmingham, Tuscaloosa, Alabama, Jacksonville, Florida, Orlando, Florida. Well, sure. All of these places are places that are have the toughest. You know, the most, some of the most anti-gay places in this country. You know, would like to see them do a few more. I've seen it said, I think it was on Facebook or somewhere, where I would like to see it said, you know, let's see them visit New York, where they now have gay marriage but no trans rights. Let's see them visit Maryland. Let's see them visit Pennsylvania, where there's still no statewide laws. You know, there are plenty of places. You know, I mean, I think in the sense that these are some of the toughest, you know, but on the one hand you say, well, these are the places that probably most need to see these things. But I think at the same time, they're also the, in a lot of cases, the places where we have the least chance of getting anything done. I frankly, you know, if I was planning this itinerary, I'd like to see them go to states where there's actually a shot of making some progress. Places like Maryland, as we just heard from Dana Byer, New York, where we desperately need that trans rights law. And, you know, the Human Rights Campaign and their, the attention that they bring and the cash that they bring could really do some useful, make an impact. You know, I just don't see how much the Human Rights Campaign is going to accomplish in Tuscaloosa, Alabama. You know, call me crazy, but, you know, I don't think that a stop on a bus tour in Alabama is going to have all that much influence. I call me crazy. You know, I don't think they're going to have a lot of impact in Kentucky. Florida, maybe. Who knows? Missouri, I don't know. Georgia, probably not either. Pretty anti-gay. You know, and don't get me wrong, I'm not saying they shouldn't go to these places, but if you're going to do something like this, why of all places, Washington, D.C.? You know, now, if they're going to, you know, do some sort of lobbying at Congress, that's great. But, you know, again, what are they going to exactly be advocating for? Gay marriage? You think that's happening in Alabama? Get real. Okay? I don't think anything is happening in Alabama. Okay? That's not to say they shouldn't go. That's not to say they shouldn't have an appeal. But I think if you're going to take on a state like Alabama, a state like Georgia, a state like Kentucky, Texas, you know, places like that, I think you need a little bit more. Whereas I think that that sort of thing could have a lot more impact if you go to states where you really, you know, could make a difference. So that's really the only criticism I have here. is I think that, number one, that the tour should be longer, and number two is I think that they should rethink their itinerary a little bit more to include places where there's a much better shot. Or sit down, I mean, you know, they're supposedly the organization that keeps track of where, of how all these state efforts are going and what the chances are and, you know, all this stuff. So why not focus those capabilities on picking out destinations where a human rights campaign bus can have an impact, where a tour like this can, you know, really change hearts and minds in places where you really have a shot of accomplishing something. You know, again, Washington, D.C., well, you know, if you're focusing on the federal stuff, okay. You know, I can understand that. I can support it. You know, we certainly need the help. You know, but I would also want to see, and again, all I know is the existence of this tour. I don't know what their agenda is going to be at these events. But what I hope is that they're going to include marriage. I'm not saying they shouldn't focus on marriage, but that it's going to be inclusive. Because, you know, if you really want people to be able to fund a fight for nationwide same-sex marriage, these people have to have workplace protections. In order to donate to the Human Rights Campaign or any other organization, you have to have money. In order to have money, you have to have an income. In order to have income, you got to have work. So, to me, work has to come first, unless all that you care about is focusing on the wealthy and powerful. So, you know, this is one of those situations where I say, great idea, HRC. Now impress me. Show me that you're going to do it in a way that A, makes sense, and B, that has an impact, and C, shows me and everyone else in this community who frankly doesn't trust you still much because of past history, that you're going to be doing something that, you know, makes sense. That you're not just going to go and do what you did in 2008 and 2007, which is cry gay marriage, gay marriage, gay marriage, DOMA, DOMA, DOMA. You know, show me something. And, you know, that's what I'm saying. And I've said this a number of times. Don't just talk about it. Show me. Show us. Put your money, literally, where your mouth is. That will impress me. That will impress me. All right. Let's see. What else do we have going on in this crazy week besides the impending collapse of the United States economy? Well, one thing we saw last week, Nancy Pelosi, to her credit, endorsed an executive order against LGBT job discrimination. In other words, the federal government shouldn't be giving federal contracts to organizations which discriminate against LGBT people. Took her this long to endorse that. This is leadership. This is support for our community. It takes you until 2011 to support this. I'd wait till you hear this quote. I have long in my time of Congress supported ending discrimination in the workplace for lesbians, gays, bisexual, and transgenders. I hate that fucking word. Transgenders. You know, you want to just, like, slap anybody who uses that term. I am not an adjective. I am a noun. Thank you very much. You know, it's interesting. Okay, now, one thing that has been you know, considered. It says that this executive order is seen as an alternative, which I disagree with. I think it's barely a start, but all right. To the passage of the Employment and Non-Discrimination Act while Republicans remain in control of the U.S. House, which is nonsense because they didn't even make an attempt to pass it when Democrats were in charge of the U.S. House, despite all their promises. And, you know, going back to what I was saying before, if we can't trust them to get the job done with the wind at their backs and in full control of all three sections of our federal government, what on earth makes any of us think that they're going to do it after the next election? You know, what it boils down to is, oh, you can trust us this time. Really. You know that old thing, and we use it in the trans community all the time to talk about the way gay rights versus trans rights are dealt with by our organizations and by legislatures, with Lucy and Charlie Brown and the football, and he runs to kick the football and Lucy pulls it away at the last minute. It's the same kind of bullshit. It really is. And so what makes you think, it's like Lucy saying, oh, don't worry, Charlie Brown, I'll hold it this time. You know, you reach a point where you have to say, I don't believe you anymore. I don't trust you. Because every time I've trusted you, you fucked me over. Promises, promises, promises. It means nothing without something to back up those promises. You know? So I would like to see that executive order. Obama doesn't need Congress to do that. But yet, where are we? We can't even get the guy to include us and workplace rights in his pride proclamation. You know, we can't even get Debbie Wasserman Schultz to include workplace rights in her pride proclamation. But boy, are they sure rah-rahing it for DOMA, aren't they? That has to tell you something. That sends a message. That says the people who we care about are the people with the deepest pockets and the fattest checkbooks. That's who we care about. That's who we're going to pay attention to. And if that's the case, if that's who they're going to pay attention to, if it's going to be the uber wealthy who they care about, well, then you know what? Let the uber wealthy go and re-elect you to office. Let the uber wealthy go and work those phone banks for you and knock on doors for you. Okay? Let the uber wealthy go and support your rights and your candidates when you need it. Because clearly, if you don't think we're worthy of your attention, well then why should the reverse be true? Why should you deserve our attention, our money, our volunteer efforts, when you're not willing to reciprocate? When all you're willing to do is make promises. And now, this year, with an election approaching, you're not even willing to make those promises. You're not even willing to talk about our issues anymore. And so, you know, I just don't know. I'm getting frustrated with these people. Oh, I am frustrated with these people. I don't know what we're gonna do. I don't know. What do you think, Mr. Mike?
Well, I think that our country is in a heck of a lot of trouble right now. These teabaggers have us held hostage. And how do you stop that? They've managed to figure out a technique whereby the minority blocks and controls all legislation in this country. And the teabaggers are a minority, and they're absolutely out of their gourds. So I get very frustrated with the situation. Everybody is, except for the teabaggers, who are just, I guess they're getting some kind of cheap thrill out of this whole thing, running us all off a cliff right now. It's a strange thing. There are flaws in the Constitution and our American democracy, I think. Free speech is absolutely central to the way this country works. We have to protect the First Amendment. And yet, there's a lot of abuse of free speech that's really dangerous speech, like Glenn Beck. I don't think you've talked about the stuff that Glenn Beck has been talking about. All of that craziness surrounding some of his recent statements on the air.
Well, yeah, but, you know, I think it's interesting because with Glenn Beck, I think people have finally figured this guy out because his ratings were tanking on television.
Sure.
And sponsors were leaving in droves. And eventually he lost his show because basically, you know, people are saying, you know what, this is a, even the far right. And a lot of the right-wingers who were supporting him and watching his show saying, you know what, this guy is a bridge too far even from me.
And in the case of Fox, they made a business decision with him because so many of the sponsors had pulled out of the Glenn Beck show. I wonder if it had more to do with that and less to do with his actual craziness and the dangerousness of what he was saying. Because in many ways, they seem to be comfortable with that. And that's astonishing to say that, but I think Fox is that crazy too. So,
well, I think Fox, you know, we're talking about, when you talk about Fox, you're talking about a network that's literally ideologically driven. And they are firmly and completely and solidly conservative.
And we forget, I think, a lot of people do. Where did the Tea Party come from, Becky? Well, it's a construction of the Koch brothers and stuff. We know the money has kind of come filtered down from them in a major way. But who promoted the Tea Party? Fox News. They did all of these events all around the country. So it's a contrived movement. The whole thing is AstroTurf.
Sure. And it's to accomplish a political agenda. And the problem is we don't have a countervailing force. I mean, here's an example. You see that on Fox News, you see trans people bashed all the time on Fox News.
Oops. Hello.
Yeah. You know,
there we go.
This is a network, or their major sponsor is ExxonMobil, rated by the Human Rights Campaign as the most homophobic, anti-LGBT company to work for in the entire country, where the owners, part owners, Comcast, were on the board of the Tennessee Chamber of Commerce, which was a heavy lobbyer for a bill in Tennessee that rolled back LGBT protections and prohibits them from being enacted anywhere in the state. I mean, that's not progressive. They just want people to think they're progressive. You know, and so there is no countervailing force, really.
Certainly not in the media. Compare number of homes. I have no idea what they really are, but Fox is maybe 2-1 in number of homes that are able to view the network over Current, which is where Oberman is now.
Right, and you know, the problem with Current, I mean, Current is there's some good stuff there. From what I understand, there are going to be less documentaries, more news. Mm-hmm. They're going to be hiring some more people. Like, there's going to be a show following Keith Olbermann at 9:00. Hey, Keith, if you need somebody, I'm available, dude. You know, believe me, just like send me an email. I'll show up at your offices tomorrow. Really, I will. You know, there's that. Okay, you've got stuff like the Young Turks online with Cenk Uygur, which is great. They do great work. I've been actually, last couple of weeks, I've been listening to Cenk a little bit. Very good stuff. Sounds a lot like me in a lot of ways. Now, granted, they don't really cover LGBT issues more than, you know, they touch on them here and there, but it's not a primary focus for them. But, you know, very solidly progressive, solidly left-wing, and unapologetically so. You know, they don't have these like Joe Scarborough. You know, give me a fucking break. It's like, well, they dumped this guy. You know, they'll fire or diminish the role of, as they put it, Cenk Uygur. They don't want him because, you know, he takes on the, you know, he's too mean to the Democrats and stuff. But, you know, they still employ, you know, racist, homophobic assholes like Pat Buchanan. He's still got a job. You know, I mean, it's just, it's totally ridiculous. I mean, Scarborough, at least he's semi-reasonable, but he's still, you know, it's like MSNBC should make up its mind. If you want to be a right-wing network, then go be a right-wing network and stop lying to people. You know, just stop trying to be fake progressives. You know, I think they've got some genuine progressives on the network. Rachel Maddow. You know, I think she's a genuine progressive, but I also think she's very constrained in what she can present because she knows perfectly well that if she really goes after the stories that matter, if she goes after a story and tries to cover the fact that in 29 states you can be fired if you're gay or in 35 states you can be fired if you're transgender, she ain't going to be working there too long. Because, you know, her corporate overlords are not going to be happy. They are comfortable. They want to be able to fire people for being gay and being transgender. They don't want new laws to restrict their ability to do that. They are perfectly content, just like Comcast is, to take those rights away. And at minimum, to make sure that we don't get any more. So what you have is a network that says they're progressive, they say they lean left, but in reality, they're run and funded by the far right. That's who owns them. That's who they have as sponsors. So, you know, even Rachel Maddow, if you're a Maddow listener or viewer, she says it all the time, and she's right. Follow the money. And the money will lead you directly to the right, to the people who fund efforts to repeal civil rights for LGBT Americans, to sponsors that are, according to the Human Rights Campaign, and I believe correctly so, the most anti-LGBT company in the entire country. That's where the money trail of MSNBC will lead you. So you can't call a company like that progressive. You can't. You can't call them real progressives. They just play them on TV. Okay? Do I think Ed Schultz is a real progressive? I don't know. Okay? You know, does a real progressive call somebody on the other side a talk slut? You know? I think Schultz is, you know, at one point I read somewhere that he was upset at only getting 4 days a week when he was transferred from 6 to 10, because of course they have their prison shows. They have their prison shows on Friday nights, so he only gets 4 nights a week. Threatened to burn down MSNBC. I mean, is a guy like that, can you call a guy like that really progressive? Okay, certainly Joe Scarborough is not. Now, the other thing that I like about MSNBC that keeps me watching is they have some really good, straight, honest journalists. Andrea Mitchell, Chuck Todd, you know, folks like that. Even Thomas Roberts, although I think he is pretty much a talking head, and he covers gay stuff, but you never see him. Just like Rachel, you never see him cover anything trans. You never see him cover anything. Never stray too far from center left. You know, maybe they lean a little bit to the left. They say lean forward. I say they lean right. Maybe occasionally the needle slips a little to the left here and there. But it really doesn't. It stays pretty much in the center. You know, and what I'm hoping is that eventually Overman will lead Current to become a contender where people like Rachel Maddow can go over to Current and start doing their shows over there. Because, you know, if Rachel leaves MSNBC, she is going to take a substantial chunk of their audience with her.
You know, Rachel has been sued this week by that Bradley Dean fundamentalist, really crazy and homophobic preacher. Yeah, and she hasn't been on the air. Is there a connection between the two? Is she off because of that?
No. She's on vacation this week. And by the way, for those who are interested, they got Melissa Harris-Perry filling in for her, and she's doing a great job.
Oh, I saw
Melissa
her last
Harris-Perry,
night.
Yeah. Melissa Harris-Perry, by the way, holds the distinction of the only guest that I'm aware of to correct Maddow on the air when she tried to erase yet again transgender people from an important story. She was the one who said, oh yeah, and don't forget about trans people. And of course, Maddow said, oh yeah, 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 and then quickly moved on. You know, I believe that there's somewhere, you know, that they just, there's an edict somewhere or just serious pressure from on high that says, we don't want to cover these people. They're not a lucrative enough demographic. They don't buy enough new cars. They don't buy enough of the crap that we sell in our commercials. So we don't need to appeal to them. So talk about the Defense of Marriage Act and talk about gay marriage and talk about don't ask, don't tell, because that's what the people with money care about. You know, I mean, seriously, I'm not kidding. These people are, let's not forget, we're talking about a business here. These people are in the business of making money, and I think we are just about out of time.
Could be. Now, let me jump in and say that Becky and I are going to test our broken computer, which I think has been fixed during the show, just right after this. And then we're going to do, for our Q1.FM listeners, we'll go ahead and repeat the show with Dr. Dana Byers' interview right at about 5 minutes after the hour, something like that. Does that sound agreeable?
Yeah, I think.
Sounds good to me. I hope you'll stick around if you missed the beginning.
Tell everybody about our podcast. Last week's podcast is up. A miracle has happened.
A miracle has happened. Last week's show with Ethan St. Pierre is ready to go. It is up, available for download. And Mr. Mike, when will we see a couple of those other recent shows?
Well, I'm working on it. There's a song called Working On It. I should bring that with me when I come to the studio next week.
There we go. Okay, so you heard it from him. All right. Good night, everybody. We'll catch you next week. Thanks for supporting this media. We'll catch you next week. Good night.
Seen Becky Giro on my monitor on the broken
I've
computer.
Seen you too. Ooh.
Oh, and you're in beautiful high fidelity sound. I wish we'd had that during your show.
Yeah, me too.
Well, it's better. Let's compare t-shirts. Mine says resist. And it has pictures of actual resistors on it, which is electronic components.
Mine says cyberpower.com, and it's the company I bought my computer from.